folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for what is always the most listened to show of the entire year, the 2026 draft review, where I'll go through each of the players drafted by the Ravens, talk about how I think they fit into the Ravens team this year, look at a lot of the trends that went on, and hopefully by the time we're done, we all know some new things about these players and who they are. I know I learned some in terms of putting this together. I want to say I really appreciate all the panelists who joined us and all the people who joined us on the stream for the 3 days of draft content. It was over 15 hours of total material and a really entertaining time. We enjoyed watching it. There are times on day three when it seems a little long, but I tell you what, Ravens had 8 selections on day three, and it was not a non-trivial day of acquisitions for the team, and that was a lot of fun. Great people joining us and great people in the stream, so really appreciate that. Hope you'll join us next year for that. There are out on YouTube right now. Those streams are available if you'd like to watch them and see some of our real-time reactions to things, in particular the round one sweating up till pick number 11. In terms of not being sure that the Ravens would even get a player who met their standard of both value and need at pick 14. And then as it turned out, they really, I think, had 3 guys to choose from. And that's what we've since heard from the Ravens at number 14. So that sweat is one of the really big trends from this draft. So they went in to pick 11. There were 3 guys on the board they really wanted, I thought, that really made sense for the Ravens. And that's Bain, Sadiq, and Ioane. And at pick number 11, the Cowboys traded up to Caleb Downs. At number 12, Caden Proctor was taken in what I think is kind of a surprising move by the Dolphins. And that meant the Ravens are going to have at least 2 of those to choose from. And then of all players, Ty Simpson, drafted by the Rams at number 13, leaves the Ravens with all 3 choices open. And they could have gone with any one of them. It's not worth rehashing all the value and long-term concerns, because I think most people by now listening to this already know that I felt Sadiq was a guy who probably had more long-term value to the Ravens, that you get more years 5 through 10 value from him than you do out of Ioane, more of a certainty that he'll be here. Or more of a likelihood, let's say, that he'll be here. And also Bain, a lot of people loved, including a lot of the other panelists. Gordon McGinnis was calling for the Ravens to trade up for Bain as early as number 10. Didn't happen at 10, didn't happen at 11, didn't even happen at 13. So the Ravens were, had the chance to pick him at number 14. They didn't do it. They picked Ioane. And of course, Bain was left at 15 to Tampa, and Sadiq went at number 16 to the Jets. So 3 high value players went boom, boom, boom there to a group that probably was not sure they were getting as high a quality player as it appeared to be. There was a lot of rumor that Ioane would go prior to 14, and there was a lot of feeling about the other 2 players that they'd be gone as well. Certainly, Reuben Bain was somebody who was originally mocked much higher. Had some recent things come to light in addition to these arm length concerns that may have cast some doubt, but he was drafted at number 15. If you're looking at some other trends that came out of this draft, I think the Ravens drafted a lot of size and a lot of power at multiple positions. You go down through this draft, they drafted a couple of big wide receivers. They drafted a very big running back. Additionally, they drafted Ioane, who was as big as you can get in guard at this class, and certainly has that typical guard build that goes with that size very well. And of course, they drafted Zion Young with their 2nd pick, who is another guy who undeniably is very large and very powerful as a player. So lots of that all the way up and down the draft, and we'll talk a little bit about that as we go. They had a rather surprising double dip of wide receiver picks in the 3rd and 4th selection. So their 3rd round selection, Jacoby Lane out of USC, and their 4th round selection, that was with the 80th pick, and then Elijah Surratt out of Indiana from the national champions at pick 115. A couple things about these guys. Very unusual, very unexpected that they would pick 2 X receiver types in a row at that spot. I think 2 players are largely impacted by this. There's no chance that DeAndre Hopkins will now be back with the Ravens. I guess it could happen in midseason if there are injuries or some such, but it's not, it will not happen to start the year at the very least. So DeAndre Hopkins had a good run here, but they've tipped their hand. He's not coming back. And Tez Walker also may not have a greatly expanded role. They brought in two rookies, and Walker is now entering his third season. It's going to be more difficult for him to get playing time. And, unfortunately, I don't really think this works out so well for him. Now, maybe he has a bigger role right off the start and he outplays these guys. Good for him if it happens. You know, he's got more speed than the two of these guys, and probably the biggest vertical threat of the three. I don't think there's any question about that. One of the things about Walker has been the inability to pair up the comeback routes with 7, 8, 9 that'll make him extremely dangerous at the top of the stem. These guys, the two receivers here, are size challenged in that regard, meaning they have a hard time separating. Walker, probably a little bit more of a natural separator, certainly when he runs one of those longer routes, or even on some deep crosses, as we saw this last season. So has certainly some ability to run right by defensive backs. So it'll be interesting to see how that competition works out. We'll talk about those guys individually that the Ravens drafted. They picked an offensive lineman in the first round, a guard at number 14, which meant that they opened up some of their options for later rounds. They didn't put themselves in a position where they really had to draft offensive line and maybe even double dip in rounds 2 and 3 or 2 and 4 or some such. And I think that's a very good thing that they did, because the offensive line had a lot of selections early. They had a lot at offensive tackle, and they had several that came very early at center, big reaches made at center. And the Ravens did have options to take some players, later on in the draft. They didn't do it. And they let the possibility of drafting a center kind of get away from them. And then they did not, in fact, draft an offensive lineman until the 7th round again. Since then, they've signed a UDFA, the center out of Penn State, and Bjornstad, the 7th round pick. They're guys that will compete on the fringe of the roster. So there's an indication that Corey Bullock probably has a good shot at the starting role. I don't really believe Adam Pinter will be the guy, but they paid him some guaranteed money, so he's going to be on the team, it appears. I think that if you look at the size in the AFC North, Pinter is extremely challenged in that department, and I don't see him as a natural fit there. So we'll see where the Ravens end up at center, but they're going to have a lot of guys who are maybe below the line in terms of expectations, will be competing for that job until perhaps the first game. So we'll see. They certainly didn't give themselves an obvious answer there. Let's put it that way. They had a surprising tight end 1 pick. Now, I think most people thought, I know I thought, that with all of the really good receiving options they had in there, they included a couple guys who didn't get drafted, Daquan Wright and Michael Trigg, who obviously have some knucklehead issues. They did not disabuse their interviewers about. And I mean all the interviews in the NFL, not just the Ravens, but it could have been a lot of teams had them black dotted. Both, physical specimens. Trigg is a remarkable tackle breaker with a fantastic catch radius, but he apparently has done some very stupid things in terms of smoking marijuana in the hotel room and things like that. Now, is it that bad to be smoking a little pot? Probably not. Is it that bad to do it? Yeah, it's just kind of stupid to do it in the hotel room where you're going to get caught. So I think interesting that a couple of the guys were clearly off the Ravens board because they would have drafted him at some point. And they ended up drafting a guy who is a pure flex guy in Hibner in their pick in the 4th round. And then they got another guy who's a combination move guy, Cuevas, later in round 5, he's 10th on the board I had of tight ends. Hibner was nowhere to be found. I'd never heard of the guy before, and I'll tell you a little bit about him. I've watched some tape and done some things recently that would alleviate some concerns and raise others, frankly, about who he is as a player. So we'll get to that. And then, you know, the radioactive tight ends on the boards, I think, were one of the really big stories. There's also the fact that there were several defensive linemen who lasted all the way until the seventh round. The Ravens did finally end up picking one of those Rayshon Penny, who we'll talk about a little bit. But they had a couple other guys, including Xavier Harris, who's an enormous human being who didn't get drafted. And it's very strange that some of these guys made it all the way through. Anyway, I know a lot of people talked about trading picks and moving up and whatnot. The Ravens did move up once. They did so using a 2027 sixth round pick. They will still have 10 picks next year after the compensatory formula kicks in. But they made all 11 picks this year. And they really needed to, given the limited number of players they had under contract. They will now move ahead in the ranking sum of how many players they have under contract. And of course, everybody will have 90 shortly once the signings of UDFAs are complete and additional cuts and signings are done. Everybody will have 90 within the next couple of weeks at least. So let's start going through these Ravens picks one at a time. We'll start at the very top. We're going to try and call them the right thing because we've been calling them Vega and Ione and such things. Venga Ioane, I believe, and it might be Venya Ioane, but Venga or Venya Ioane of Penn State. He spent 4 years there. For some reason, his birthday was not generally available, but he is just 22 in April. This is another trend for the Ravens, by the way, that they picked younger players in earlier rounds. They did pick a couple older guys later on. We'll get to them, including one hilariously old player. But they generally stuck with their guns, which has been draft younger players, weight that more heavily. And that was despite the fact that the Liars luncheon, they were asked about the percentage of players 24 and older that were on their board, and DaCosta said they were up to 18% from 4% last year. And, you know, he talked about it being maybe NIL, but that they'd had more. And my immediate reaction to that is, sure, but that's going to be weighted towards the back end of the board. And that's really what proved out as the Ravens drafted players here. Kenyon Sadiq was a 21 year old, and Ioane is a 22 year old, and there are guys who they still liked at the top of the draft for age related. And I'll give you everybody's age, and you'll see the tendency is right there. Ioane has huge hands, good jumps, a slow 40 at 5.35, but an ideal pear shaped guard frame. You don't always get that. Okay, a lot of the guys who are playing guard in college still have that leaner build. He has the build you want for a guard, a low center of gravity, a lot of sand in the pants. He is a little slow for pulling naturally. I don't think that the Ravens will notice any real difference between him and Fa'alele in terms of the quickness, but I expect Ioane to have significantly better footwork. And Ioane, I mean, one of the knocks on him is a little bit of decisiveness heading to level two. But after seeing the lack of decisiveness from Fa'alele last year being a major detriment to his play, then I think that we'll see an uptick in that, even with a player who has certainly a lot of room to grow in terms of decisiveness heading to level two. He's been durable over 3 years, missed the Iowa game last year due to an ankle injury, but he's otherwise been durable over 3 years. One of the best interior offensive line pass blockers in the class, who's also a good run blocker. I think he was schemed around, almost featured at Penn State in terms of where they put him. And you've all seen the highlight where he's lining up as a inline tight end and he pulls to the right and he knocks somebody on his rear end. It's something was done semi-regularly, was that Ioane was put in some position where he could make a big block like that and spring a play. Outstanding penalty rate for his college career, only one every 460.8 snaps. That's less than 25% of the snaps that John Simpson's had as a pro. So let's hope that holds up. Only one penalty in 614 snaps in 2025. So I expect Ioane will be at right guard for the Ravens. We'll get to that a little bit later. I'll hold on to that. Pass blocking. He is all but impervious to the bull rush during his college career. His build and technique are both advantages in anchoring. Uses his hands well, resets well, reverses the C in his back, the reverse C in his back you see when he's trying to get reset or initially loses some contact battle. But he's extremely good and has plays with extremely heavy hands as well. So the things he does to recover and re-anchor are generally very effective. His processing speed is okay. I think at the NFL level, he'll be challenged with that again. I think it's solid for stunts and blitzes, but he does have an ability, pulls out of the bag every once in a while, where he jolts an opposing lineman. Now, why does that matter? Okay, so if you have a tackle crossing the guard's face and he's trying to lean in to the shoulder of the center, which is often the case on an interior game, then if he is able, the biggest concern you'll have is a lack of matched depth between the center and the right guard in terms of how they hand off that stunt. One of the things that the guard can do to make it a little easier is if he has the feel that stunt is occurring by the fact that the outside player, the three tech, is crossing his face, then he can jolt that player, if he can do it, out a little bit and hold him up from getting any upfield penetration, which will allow the center an easier time to pick up that block. Now, that's something that he did a few times on tape that I really liked, and hopefully he brings that to the game. And I don't doubt that's something Ledford or any offensive line coach would absolutely love about him. So, he has some ability to do that. His processing speed, I'll just say it's okay. The place where he is a little vulnerable, since no one really wants to use two hands on him. Nobody wants to try and bull rush him. They try and use a half man move of some sort against him, generally speaking. They have to attack him left or right to try and get by him. And oftentimes there'd been a bubble on his side. And he's more vulnerable to that. He almost sometimes looks like a tackle trying to drive his guy around the pocket. You should not do that. Generally speaking, at guard, you really need to try and pick up a man. It can be dangerous. And we've seen this happen occasionally where a guard will try and drive a guy south of the pocket. And the risk you run is that you put your tackle's legs at risk. And so you don't want to do that. And hopefully pocket integrity will be maintained. That's a good, coaching opportunity, but it's also, they're going to have to work with what Ioane's, foot speed and athleticism limits are there in terms of the half man moves. But generally speaking, he gets his hands on the other guy. He's disruptive when he does it. And he's extremely good in reacting to an initial loss and squaring up or getting his guy south of the pocket when he has to use that as his technique. Very difficult to bull rush. So pass blocking is the most important, as I say, for any offensive line position. And run blocking, if anything, is where he has some slight deficiencies. But pass blocking, I'm doing a little bit of nitpicking to talk about, is his processing speed really up to the NFL level? Well, he does some things well on stunts. That's a good thing. And there are a lot of things he's going to be taught at the NFL level. Let's switch over to run blocking. He does have a problem sometimes standing up on some reps. So that's something that it's important not to do. He probably has an ability to recover from it because he's a little smaller than some guards at 6'4", height-wise. I mean, at 6'4", he's not smaller in any regard otherwise. And he also has a generally lower center of gravity, but he still stands up and people can get under his pads on run plays, which generally doesn't mean he gets pushed way far back into the backfield, but they may be able to slip off him left or right to make a play on a running back. So that's something you ideally don't want. He can be beaten by quicker and smaller players in space. He's kind of your typical guard that gets out to level two and gets a little lungy. I would say if I were to point something out, he has a little bit of indecision when he gets to level two. Ideally, you have a guard who knows ahead of time on the play where he thinks he's going to go and then is able to quickly decide as the play changes, as he's, rotational schemes may occur, as maybe a run blitz gets set up or somebody else vacates the position he expected to be in. He has to be able to quickly look for work and find his second target. I think that's an area where he's a little bit slower. He probably will learn to do a lot of things at the NFL level that he hasn't done as much of in college, where he'll just use himself as an obstacle. I always thought that was something Falele should have done, is like, I dare you to come at me and try and get back to this ball carrier when I'm looking right at you. And he doesn't even have to make contact under some of those circumstances. But that was something Falele really never learned to do well. And it's something that hopefully Ioane will. Great finisher. So he has lots of reps where opponents are getting angry with his effort to the echo of the whistle. So in particular, I think where this will show up is on the back end of combination blocks. So a lot, he's going to be in a combination block with a center a lot of the time, sometimes with the right tackle, and he may be on the back end in either case. When he's on the back end of that, meaning he's not the climber on the play, if that guard or if that center or tackle can help him by getting that player off his pins just a little bit of imbalance, Ioane is going to finish him a high percentage of the time, or a very noticeable percentage of the time, let's just say, where he'll take him all the way to the ground. And it is something that really tires an opposing defensive tackle. I'm not sure what the brotherhood of the NFL thinks about guys who finish very regularly at the NFL level. There are a lot of guys in college and they're doing it because they need to make millions in the NFL. At the pro level, it may be frowned upon. And I don't know for sure what level of willingness there is to finish continuously over the course of a multi-year career. It may actually be disadvantageous to do so in terms of how you're viewed. But he is a guy who certainly is perfectly capable of finishing a lot of blocks, and he did so in college. He was primarily a left guard at Penn State. He did have 7 snaps at left tackle, 17 at center. If you're thinking, 314 at right guard and 7 at right tackle. So he played all 5 positions. He could be about as dominant a center blocker as we've ever seen if he were to move there. It would be a big ask, and it would be an enormous rabbit for the Ravens to pull out of their hat if they moved Ioane to center. But boy, would that be pretty cool if they did. I don't expect that to happen. I expect him to be the right guard. John Simpson is left guard, probably will not move since he hasn't played anywhere else in his career. Simpson has been a guy who's been penalized very frequently in his NFL career. In fact, I'll refer to somebody later as having a certain number of millisimpsons. But Ioane has less than 250 millisimpsons, including less than, means he has less than 250, 25% of the penalty rate that John Simpson has had in his pro career. So the fact that the guy's been penalized that much with a late move, you know, doesn't bode well for fewer penalties, certainly. So that would be an issue, I think, moving Simpson. In the case of Ioane, I think expectations are very high, and he could certainly turn in a top shelf career. If I were to be concerned about anything, it'd be the fact that he'd be good and not great. And if he's good and not great, he might end up being a player that the Ravens have a lot of difficulty re-signing. The reason being that they can't quite afford to give him the fifth-year option because he would make left tackle money, and then he's incented to go to the market. So the Ravens, the pressure will be on to try and re-sign him after 3 years. If he's in that category or if he is already great, they'll sign him after 3 or 4 years since they won't have any problem using the fifth-year option. So if he ends up being Quentin Nelson or he ends up being John Hannah or any of those kind of players, then yeah, he'll the Ravens won't have any problem using all of the market frictions available to themselves, fifth-year option, franchise tag, whatever that might be. So that wouldn't be an option. The problem is if he's a 75th percentile guard, then they're going to have an issue with, do we really want to pay this guy and give this guy top shelf left tackle money, or do we need to try and figure out another way to get this done or even draft over? So that's the risk. And hopefully it doesn't come to fruition. He signed after 3 years because he's so great you can't afford to take any such risk, or he signed it for 4 years because you already have offered him the fifth-year option and you're happy to pay it. So we're all rooting for him, and hopefully he's the Hall of Fame player that many of us hope he'll be. Or at least let's not put the standards too high. Let's hope he's a Ring of Honor player. I think it's a high expectation. It's an expectation. You look back to a good but not quite great guard of Ben Grubbs. They weren't able to keep him. You know, they did have competing money for Marshall Yanda at the same time. They made the right choice. They kept Marshall. Grubbs retired. He had a good career with the Saints, but he retired after a few more years, and Yanda played on for significantly longer. And if you know, Grubbs is probably the. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. The cautionary tale for what Ioane could be if he is good but not great. And that is all I'll probably say about that. Let's move on. We'll talk about the second round pick, Zion Young. So we're on the stream, and six panelists were in the stream at that point on day two. It might have been six or seven. I'm not sure. But every single one of us had Zion Young as our top selection in the second round. To say that this draft went chalk for the first two rounds for the Baltimore Ravens is the understatement of the decade. I think that an awful lot of people had exactly these two players go into the Ravens in the first two rounds. And Zion Young, great pick at number 45. Fantastic that he was still available. A lot of people had him at the end of the first round, early in the second round. And the Ravens ended up with the choice between several players who I thought would have been great selections, but Zion Young would have been number one on my board, was number one on my board. He is a big and somewhat ponderous edge. He wins with length and power versus the run and pass. So he's 6'6", 262, 33-inch arms. Excuse me, ran 4.75 at his pro day, and he's 22 in March. So another young player by these standards. And this is a position which requires grown man strength, and he plays it with grown man strength, and he's just turned 22. Ioane, the same thing in terms of being a big player at a young age who has his, you know, at the height of his physical powers or at least very close to it. He's a poor 10-yard at 172. That's a little bit unusual for an edge to be that poor and just average jumps. He does have a DWI arrest from December. I don't know the current status of that. I don't know if it's determined or whatnot, but that's something they certainly would have looked at. If you saw hit the call to him, Maureen saw it before I did. She said, you got to look at this. This doesn't look good. I would say, I kind of wonder about what the hell is going through this kid's mind at the time. Take a look at the call. I'm not going to try and do it, but he just kept saying, let's go, let's go, let's get to it, let's get to it, pretty much the whole time. It's almost like he was in a contrarian style where he's going to almost say no to anything that Eric DeCosta or one of the others had to say to him. Anthony Weaver, got him on the phone. And he goes, here's Coach Weaver. He gets him on the phone. He goes, are you ready? Yeah. Zion Young says that to Anthony Weaver. And Weaver says back to him, are you ready? Kind of thing. It's just a weird call, and it's one of these things that I hope it's just innocent, harmless nervousness and whatnot. It was weird, and I wonder if he's going to be an easy guy to coach just from that call. Hopefully not a problem. But Anthony Weaver, if anybody can handle him, it'll be Weaver. They do have a defensive line coach to talk to him as well, but Weaver will be one of the guys who certainly gets right in there and does a rip drill, as I've talked about before, with those edge rushers. So we'll see him teach him a few things, I hope. Anyway, pass rush productivity was in the 95th percentile last year. 58% of that came from the offensive left side. He had 1.5% coverage. Now, this is an important feature of Zion Young. He does not give you Sam capabilities. He is a pure rush linebacker. Tavius Robinson so far has only been a rush linebacker. To me, that means they probably are planning to move Tavius to maintain early down responsibilities on that strong side, where he'll now play against tight ends. Might make him more effective. That could be a good thing. And Tavius has dropped a little bit into coverage, certainly more than Zion Young did in college. He had 31 stops and 6 missed tackles this last year. That's a 5.2-1 ratio. It's 4.5 career. That's good, not great for an outside linebacker. There are certainly some that are better. And he had a 44% close rate in 2025. Now, that is a fantastic combination. Okay, so he's in the 95th percentile of pass rush productivity, which is essentially measuring all pressures with a higher weighting to sacks. And then he had a 44% close rate in 2025, which is taking his sacks plus his quarterback hits divided by his total pressures. That is an outstanding combination and obviously exactly what you want, to be good in both the kind of the gross pressure number and the percentage of your pressures that end in a quarterback hit or sack. He had 3 forced fumbles and 5 passes defense over the last 2 seasons. In his, one of the shifts you see from his career, he started at Michigan State for 2 years, then he finished at Missouri. But he had 50% pass snaps his first 3 seasons. That is an extreme run defender number, extreme on the edge. So that's a guy who they really have as an early down run defender primarily. Even your interior defensive linemen rarely play that high a percentage. There are a few who do, but and a couple in this draft, but it's pretty darn rare. And the last year at Missouri, he played 58% pass snaps. They really converted him to be more of a pass rush. Specialist is the wrong word, but make the pass rush a significant portion of his snaps. And he really came through for them with a big year. So if you looked at his previous production, I wouldn't be too concerned about the lower level there, because they were using him primarily on less sure pass snaps. He undeniably has the size to kick inside, which is a big deal for the Baltimore Ravens. If you think about who they have, they would love to have a regular kick-in guy. Right now it's Tavius Robinson. They could get a second with Zion Young, and there could be packages where they want to try that with having both of them on the field. Now, Travis Jones is a guy who's played basically every pass snap the last couple of seasons now. They will probably want him on the field no matter what. On the inside, that really forces a lot of the blocking activity to be focused on him, which is an unappreciated value that Travis has on the pass rush in general. It's completely driven from Travis Jones. He actually led the team in sacks this last year, but even before then, the pass rush completely driven by his presence and the need to do it, much in the way it was by Haloti Ngata way back in the years, and for a while there by Pernell McPhee, who from the inside commanded double teams in a way that really allowed a lot of other one-on-one pressures on the outside. So he has that size. Now, this is interesting. At Missouri, he only did it 19 times in 2025. So for whatever reason, they said, okay, we want you on the edge. Now, that may be a Missouri thing. They didn't have another guy from the outside who could provide nearly what he did. That certainly might have been true. So if the Ravens were to sign Jadeveon Clowney, or not even sign Jadeveon Clowney, but they want to use Hendrickson and Green on third down for pass rushing, then I think that's an opportunity where Zion Young can kick inside. He could also be on the sideline, obviously, for those plays. And Tavius Robinson could be the guy on the inside. It could be Matabike is back there on the inside. We're certainly all praying that that's the case. But, the Ravens have some options now with the pass rush, which is good to know. And I think very importantly, Zion Young takes over some early down run snaps. And we'll get to that in just a second, because I want to talk about his strengths there. He does have only 1 year of top shelf pass rush production. He was in the SEC. He was still just 21 years old. And it came after 3 seasons of being, again, primarily a run defender. So I think I'm not terribly concerned about that. So I'm positive certainly on who he is. In terms of some other notes from tape, he sets the edge very well. He uses his power and his length in combination very successfully. He's definitely attempts to get both hands on the opponent a lot. He does go to the single shoulder once in a while, but he denies space exceptionally well on the edge. He's a turns the tackle or the tight end, if that's who he's against, very easily, and goes very, very naturally to the bull rush to try and deny space that way, run or pass. We'll just call it, you know, two-gapping that with both arms. His speed to power is really his go-to move as a pass rusher. So he has a bull rush, and it's terrific. It's, you know, it's Suggs-esque in terms of its quality. But he also has a pretty good speed to power move where he'll try and use the half man, get to the edge. And if he's got that tackling beat a little bit, he'll get him off his pins with extraordinary power, forcing him back towards the quarterback and into the pocket. That'll lead to some first pressures, which should help set up some additional things for other Ravens defenders. They needed first pressure players. Zion Young gives them one of those, I think. Very powerful build, lots of lower body mass as well. It's not just upper body. He's polished up top too, but he's got a lot of lower body mass. He reacts to the quarterback well. He has an inside move that I think is part of punishing premature pocket climbers. So why does this occur? It starts usually with the offensive tackle oversetting to his side, and he's often gone up against a naked tackle on the left side. And when that would occur, he would that left tackle often will overset to the outside to try and not be beat by speed, and effectively not be beat by speed that Young then can convert to power. But that also means that Young can make a ghosting move to the inside, or one where he accepts some contact, but he's going to try and move through inside in that B gap with contact. And there he was effective. And the quarterbacks who prematurely climb, in particular, the guys who are a little bit antsy and they want to move up and they don't feel that pressure from the blind side as well, naturally move up in the pocket. And he was very good at making those guys feel additional pressure from that side. He was penalized 6 times in 2025. That's one thing that you got to look at and worry about. I look at it as, you know, it's a lot of quarterback hits that he laid this last year. I would expect there to be some penalties. If you look at his highlights and look at his sacks mostly, you'll see a lot of plays where he's letting up on the quarterback. There's an obvious effort not to contact the head and shoulders of the quarterback. There's a lot of effort not to club the quarterback high other than on the arm, where there would be risk of a penalty being called. And there's a lot of effort not to drop his weight on the quarterback. And you notice this, I can only think, and I wasn't able to find, you know, his penalties or look back at them. Maybe it's fair to say I didn't try to look and see his penalties of this type and see how many of those times was it a roughing the passer situation. I don't even know if he might have had 5 offsides and 1 roughing the passer, you know, kind of thing, in which case I'm not concerned at all. But if there are multiple roughing the passer penalties, then that would be something that needs to be coached up, because the NFL, I think the calls on those roughing the passer flags are much tighter. And so you need to make sure that doesn't become a problem at the next level. I would say he projects with the Ravens to be a rush outside linebacker only. It's not a great fit with Hendrickson there. So Hendrickson may be able to play fewer early downs because Young is there to play early downs, quote unquote, for him. Hendrickson may become more of a designated pass rusher, which probably is a good thing given Hendrickson's age and current injury history, that you don't want to try and abuse him. The Ravens do have a good contract with him to get out of after 2 years. But that doesn't mean you want to waste whatever snaps you have having Hendrickson try to do something he's not particularly good at, which is defend the run. You probably want Zion Young to take more snaps. If I were to guess, I'd say Hendrickson's percentage of overall snaps comes down pretty significantly with the Ravens. That he would play, you know, 8 to 10 percentage points lower with the Ravens, who are a very heavy rotational team, than he did with the Bengals in the last season he was healthy. Okay. So anyway, I think we're likely to see that. And he Young really helps in that regard. The Ravens exactly need what they needed was a extra run defender. They just really needed on the Sam side and they didn't get it. So that's, you have some trade-offs in any draft pick you make. You never have the exact intersection of need and value, or rarely do. I do believe it'll be Tavius, though, who switches. I think he's the more natural player to adapt to some coverage responsibilities. And of course, I've just, as I mentioned earlier, the potential is there to be a kick-in piece for obvious passing downs. My original comment about him when I put together the edge rushers drafting is I'd be very happy if the Ravens can snag him at number 45. And as it turned out, they did. A very, very fortunate, I think, combination of events. There were some players who probably were reached for ahead of him. For him to drop to 45, I have to wonder from looking at his draft acceptance call if he didn't have an interview problem with some of the teams ahead of him. Like there's something about him they just didn't like. I'm thrilled that he's a Raven at 45, and I'm sure Anthony Weaver, Minter, the defensive line coach, are all going to get the best out of him. So he fits the need. He'll play a lot of snaps this year, and he should immediately become a significant rotational piece for the Ravens. Move on to their second day two pick, which was Jacoby Lane. Who was Jacoby Lane? I guess out of USC. He played 3 years there. Big, slender X receiver, won't turn 22 until August, so he's still 21. We're seeing the age of the top guys is still a primary concern. So they have some guys they drafted again later who are older, but not there. So, outstanding jumps. He has absolutely enormous hands at 10 and a half inches. That if you're not familiar with hand size, that's an offensive lineman's hands. And a lot of offensive linemen would be very happy to have hands that size. There was one guy, I think, with 11-inch hands in this draft, but most are under 10 inches or a lot are under 10 inches, or if they're 10 inches, they're 10 on the nose, or they're 10 and an eighth kind of thing. That's exceptional hand size for a wide receiver, very rarely seen. His receiving metrics at USC were outstanding, 10.1 yards per target. He gets a target every 4.2 routes run, so he's a very heavy target share guy. Yards per route runs were 2.42. His ADOT was 12.5, so he's not getting a lot of cheapo throws. There were some, but not a lot of cheapo throws. His yak per reception of 4.8 is not particularly exceptional. I want to get into that a little bit. Here's the concerning number. Is he had 31.1% contested catches, on which he had, I believe, a 49% success rate. That's not good. That's too high a percentage of targets to have a very challenged catch rate on, a 49%. So that was the one thing about him that dropped him a lot on my rankings, is that, you know, he's a big guy, and you look at the speed at 447, you think he could have more open targets than that. And, you know, he might if you were a tight end, say, with that kind of speed and whatnot. But there were a couple of mitigating factors I want to get to later. A drop percentage of 7.5% is a little high, not uncoachable probably, but not what you'd like out of a draftable receiver. His quarterback rating throwing to him was 106.3. Career, though, it's 126.9. The high difference there between the quarterback rating his senior year and his career is in the interceptions to him. So last year he had four touchdowns only and two interceptions, which is a terrible ratio for a draftable wide receiver. You'd never like to see a 2-to-1 relationship between those two things. Prior in his career is 14-to-1. So he's 18-3 in his college career. I would just say the answer is somewhere in between those totals. I don't know if it's as good as 18-3, in terms of how I would project that forward into a pro career, but I would expect he's better than the 4-2 last year. So hopefully Lamar Jackson will get him more time. It'll get him more ability to get away from receivers, but that's not really what he does for you. The big thing he does for you is he gives you the body control and the hands to have highlight quality takeaways from defensive backs. So if DeAndre Hopkins last year basically was in this role where he was an outside the numbers receiver who was in single coverage out there and could take the ball right away from the opposing defensive back with better adjustments to the football, better high pointing of the ball. And in particular, I think Lane is in a position to really take advantage of defensive backs who are not good peekers into the backfield. So to the degree he's able to move down the sideline, not give away what's going on with the quarterback at the time, and then get his hands up late, which I'm sure is something they're going to work on with him a lot, that I think is going to be very effective at the NFL level. Brandon Stevens type cornerbacks who would do that, I would think would be regularly burned by his ability to out jump them and out adjust them at the catch point. Now, there is one enormous negative that comes with Jacoby Lane. It's why I had him lower on my board. And the contested catch rate basically accrues from this problem, is that he has limited ability to accelerate and decelerate. So we think back to Miles Boykin. He had similar problems in his a very slow 0-60 player, we'll call it. That's half of the problem. The other half is that because he's so big, he's a guy who has to sink his hips significantly to come back to the quarterback, or even to fake a move, he's sinking his hips. As you do that at the top of the stem, you give away a lot of information to the opposing cornerback about what you're likely to do. Pro cornerbacks are going to be more able to decode what that means than college corners were able to. And they're going to be able to do more about it too. So Lane is in a problem where I think that will be the barrier to whether or not he becomes really a very good NFL receiver and somebody the Ravens are very happy they drafted, or just a guy, you know, who will probably be around for a few years and may or may not really make an impact. He could be Demetrius Williams as a receiver. He could be a Miles Boykin as a receiver. He could be a guy who learns how to run block, given his size, learns how to keep his feet and do some of the other things the Ravens like run blocking wide receivers to do. But he could be a guy who never really becomes special as a receiver. If he does conquer that, I think that the sky's the limit. I think he could be a truly outstanding receiver. I think he'd be one of the guys who makes a lot of highlight reel catches. A few guys with terrific catch radiuses in this draft. I mean, Michael Trigg, a tight end, was that kind of guy. But Jacoby Lane's, his highlights, if you look at them, they're all body control, catch radius, high pointing of the football, basically beating defenders out for that high pointed ball. He hurdles a lot downfield. That bothers me. I like him to cut that down. Tight ends do it a lot. I don't know why they are happy with tight ends doing it, but it's a fumble waiting to happen. Big chance for a field flip when you hurdle, and also big chance for an injury. I hope they'll try and cut that out of his game. And let's see. If you want to look at one of the great combination plays of the year, this is versus Georgia Southern, so it's not a top flight opponent, don't get me wrong, but he had one of the most incredible combination one-handed grabs with an OPI on the other side. I don't even know if the OPI was called it was actually, no, sorry, I'm wrong, it was actually called a DPI on the play, but Lane really shoves off on the Georgia Southern defender. And it's in the left side of the end zone. I'm going from visual memory now. I don't have it up in front of me. It's in the left side of the end zone. He's pushing off with I think his left hand, and he's catching the ball with his right hand. And it's just a remarkable. It's also the sideline is involved. I mean, it's one of those remarkable highlights. This will be what he becomes known for if he really succeeds in the NFL. So it definitely could be a part of what he is. I'd say so far, by the way, does not really show the want to as a run blocker that Ravens would like. This hopefully is something they've had a long talk with him about already, and is something he's going to need to improve on, certainly at the NFL level. I think his run blocking can be improved with coaches. His ability to beat press and improve the top of the stem deficiencies are the limitation, of course, he has to overcome. I already said that. I don't see him as a great fit for the Ravens, but they made the pick in the third round. I had a fourth round value on him. To me, it's a little bit of a reach. I'm okay with it. If the Ravens, believe he's the right guy. And I do think they got value with their next pick, which we're going to go into in part two of this show. So I appreciate you joining me for part one here. Thanks for this. Is always a show that gets a ton of listens per year. I know you folks are looking forward to it all the time. But we're going to talk about Elijah Surratt, who is the next pick next, and a guy I actually had a higher grade on. But I want to talk to thank folks for listening, of course. Thanks, folks, for all the loyal listens throughout the year. It's been a tough year for the Ravens. You know, 2025 was not a good year. I think listens were generally down for podcasts in the area, but held up very well here on Film Study. I appreciate you and appreciate the growth and love you sharing the channel. Please use hashtag Film Study Ravens for your questions. I will answer them in the best way I know how, whether that's doing one of the 1 to 3 minute videos. If it's a really thoughtful idea or comment, I'd love to have you on to talk about it. During the off season, I have some time to do a lot of these shorts with people. I've had some great stuff. The guy came up with a percentage of caps spent by Super Bowl winners, last 14 Super Bowl winners. Terrific episode. All kinds of other stuff about the math of football has been on. And you don't have to do anything that has that much research. If you have something that is just a topic you're passionate about franchise building, or about why you think some player needs to be given a different opportunity. That's great. That's just the kind of thing I want to talk to you about for between 15 and 25 minutes and provide some shorter content that people can bite into and hopefully get the addiction to film study that I'm looking for here. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.